Vanguard Radio for the precious 8%.
I believe that your primitive cerebrum kept trying to wake up.
Broadcasting deep in the belly of the Quah, this is Jeff Beck. I'm your host for
The Truth Is No Defense.
Welcome to the broadcast. This is the 27th edition of Truth Is No Defense. Until this movement can put boots on the ground, let's use the time constructively. My wish is these broadcasts, along with the work of many others, might help to form a coherent intellectual basis or an ideology upon which the movement might grow. It's been said that ideas are as dangerous as guns. So, let's make the best of our situation and think. Let's think about our ideology. Let's think about how we may educate those new to our ideology. So, for this broadcast, let's think about our enemies. The political philosopher Carl Schmitt said, "The first rule of politics is to know just who is an enemy." How do we as white nationalists identify our enemies? An enemy, it seems to me, is a person or group that is by nature compelled to destroy another group or person. Enemies are things which are forever so, and enemies are implacable. In contrast, those who are merely in opposition are not necessarily compelled so by nature, nor is their condition necessarily perpetual. All factions in opposition wish to end the status quo, to move society in a new direction. In some sense, oppositionalists are revolutionaries. I consider some libertarians and some leftists to be oppositionalists. Hans Hermann Hoppe is an example of a true libertarian oppositionalist. Though for the left there are few oppositionalists today. The tentacles of Jewish influence in the political left extend so far, one wonders, would there even be a left were it not for the Jews? Indeed, minus Jewish influence, the left might migrate to a political ideology similar to National Socialism. Distinguishing implacable foes from those who are wittingly in opposition is a task we must now consider. Oppositionalists, unlike our enemies, can think independently. They can observe and use reason. Though from our perspective as white nationalists, they have come to incorrect conclusions. There are relatively few oppositionalists, just as there are relatively few congenital enemies of white nationalists. But importantly, unlike other oppositionalists, the enemies of white nationalists are powerful, influential, and wealthy. And what's more, they are winning. The vast majority of Americans are only reactively opposed, not truly opposed, to white nationalism. Or for that matter, any other form of oppositionalism. You may compare the general public to B.F. Skinner's pigeons. That is, they are conditioned creatures, shaped by a regimen of rewards and punishments. Because lemmings distort and misinterpret much of the propaganda they've been taught by public schools and television broadcasts, there are endless variety and shades of lemminghood. But they all share one attribute. They all serve the interests of the status quo, in some fashion, even if they are apathetic. The lemming phenomenon is really quite complex, yet all lemmings are categorized into one of two partitions, active or passive, but more on that later. In contrast, a true oppositionalist is a rare bird. A true oppositionalist is someone capable of independent thought, one who is capable of ordering his thought in some ideologically consistent fashion. A true oppositionalist is someone we want on our side. We ought to be measured in how we approach oppositionalists. It's not that we need to be slippery or deceptive or somehow sweeten our message. It's just that we need to be persuasive and truthful. One may ask, are patriotards oppositionalists? No. Patriotards lack the capacity for independent thought. Patriotards are active lemmings. Lemmings capable of crude levels of political activism. The Minutemen are fine examples of active lemmings. Ironically, anti-racist activists or the Antifa are the mirror image of patriotard lemmings. Both groups are active lemmings, and both groups serve the multiculturalist agenda, which is to say, they are both servants to the state's mad cult of equality. When white nationalists use the term lemming, we are most often referring to passive lemmings. Consider an acquaintance of mine, and his example is rather interesting, for I have actually convinced him that race does exist and that Jews are actively subverting our nation. He now sees the problem with his own eyes. Of course, that is only when he isn't playing video games, riding his motorcycle, or flying his airplane. The fact is, as long as our enemies provide him with the fuel and money he needs to cool his home and enjoy the many luxuries he's amassed, he won't be joining us. But at least, where there was once hostility, there is passive neutrality. He has become a passive lemming. Passive lemmings are preferable to active lemmings. The passives are no longer a tool for our enemies. They don't actively serve the interests of the SPLC or the Republican Party. But our enemies remain nonetheless. You know, it's easy to label oppositionalists and the many varieties of lemmings as enemies, since the number of those who are reactively opposed to our message is so vast, one might conclude the entire population is our enemy. What keeps the lemmings hostile to our message is the extensive power our enemies hold in the business, media, and educational institutions. Increasingly, though, the system is making mistakes. It is biting those whom it should not, and it is alienating others. For each outlandish provocation committed by the Jews and their proxy, the United States government, there are many counter-reactions or counter-trends. Both white nationalism and Islamic fundamentalism are in some part reactions against the Jews' mad vision of global rule over goy nations, commonly termed globalism. Certainly we, the white nationalists, can expect growing support as our shrinking population bears the burden of increased taxation, job loss due to affirmative action, and casualties caused by fighting the Jews' wars. No doubt the mounting indebtedness of the U.S. government and its citizenry will bring many to our side if we are to use these events to our advantage. We, the white nationalists, did not create these problems, yet we can use Zog's missteps and greed to further our movement. These countertrends may become the vector which transforms the movement from a marginalized faction to a full-blown revolutionary force. Though our enemies are few in absolute numbers, they are very powerful and well-organized. I'll name them now. The State of Israel, the Jewish diaspora living in our midst, along with the Goy servants and Goy enablers who actively and knowingly collaborate with the Jews. Truly, it is this group alone which is our only true and everlasting foe. The rest can be made to see things our way. It's really not hard to draw a line between implacable foes and both oppositionalists and lemmings. The formula is quite simple. If white nationalists had control of the media and educational centers, most oppositionalists and all lemmings would follow our lead. Only true enemies would not. It's just that simple. There is one group we've not discussed. So far, we've assumed all oppositionalists and all lemmings are Aryans. How are we to deal with other races? Where do they fit in? How, for instance, are we to deal with a Reconquista like the Jewise Vos de Aslan, or black nationalists like Louis Farrakhan? On one hand, they mean our extinction. Yet, they too are racial nationalists seeking many of the same ends as white nationalists. A big difference between us and them, besides the racial one, is that they are organized and have some representation in conventional politics. This is most unfortunate for us, since we are in no position to cooperate with them against our common enemy, the Jew and his proxy, the U.S. government. Until we are organized, black and Mexican nationalists have every incentive to join in with the Jews' plan for white genocide. The genocide not only of white nationalists, but white oppositionalists and white lemmings. We all go down together. Consider two Muslims. They are actively fighting the Jew. Only they are facing the Jew on the battlefield. No white man, to my recollection, has in my lifetime drawn the sword to oppose the Jew. Hezbollah, the Islamic Brotherhood, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, deserve our respect, if only grudgingly. Frankly, I find great inspiration in Hezbollah's courageous determination in Lebanon. We, as white nationalists, can learn much from the Islamic model of resistance, just as we can from the one in National Socialist Germany. Yet, we face a mortal threat from the presence of Muslims in our homelands. Also, we want no part of another Semitic religion or its followers. Worse, our European brothers face imminent destruction at the hands of the Muslim invader. Yet, the struggle Muslims face in their native lands is a struggle quite similar to our own. They wish to be free from Washington's puppets ensconced in Egypt, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia, just as we wish to be free from the Washington tyranny itself. How we deal with the Islamic movement is the most important question. We need allies, just as the American colonists did in their struggle against Britain. Contrary to our mythology, without assistance from Britain's adversaries, we would never have gained our independence. A parenthetical note. Let's remind the listeners and readers of this transcript. This broadcast is about ideas, opinions, and speculation. There is no conspiracy, nor do I advocate one with any group mentioned above. Whether events unfold as speculated, nobody can foresee. Now, setting aside the geopolitical speculation, know that whatever small part you play in reaching a lemming or oppositionalist, pulling him over to our side, makes an enormous difference. It may literally save a career. A listener to this broadcast called me and gave me this report. Clara, I'll call her, is a supervisor for a large retailer, a company all of us would instantly recognize should I tell you the name. Recently, a white manager for one of this firm's regional stores was demoted to the rank of a grocery bagger. This white manager, she told me, had the temerity to give a critical performance review of a Mexican subordinate. The peers of this white manager, most of whom are also white, sided with the spic after he complained the white manager had discriminated against him. So, we have another white man taken down by his own people. It is a common tale. It won't stop until the notion of white solidarity returns to our people's minds. And that is our job, you and me. Thanks for listening.
Vanguard Radio, waking you up.